The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.
Hi, I'm Candace Michelle, and you're listening to another segment of Our Community. I've often mentioned that the volunteer factor in our area is one of the most amazing things, and most of my guests hold pivotal roles in various nonprofit or community groups that contribute in a large way to the quality of life here in our area. They not only make a significant difference in the general well-being of our small towns, they're instrumental in improving the lives of everyday people just like you and me. In an area with a large share of veterans and where the median age of our population is 52, these efforts are critically important. One such volunteer is my guest today. His dedication to and empathy for the people he helps on a regular basis is inspiring. Welcome to the show, Jim Newman.
Well, it's good to be here. Familiar territory for me.
So. I know, it's great, isn't it?
I know, it's like being, you know, having coffee with friends.
So, Jim, you and I first became acquainted, I think it was about a dozen years ago.
Oh, at least.
With...
Late 90s.
No. I didn't move here till 2004. So, the TV station... I'm thinking it was like 2006, maybe?
Well, could be. All right.
Right? KBSC TV, which was our little funny TV station that was actually right across the hall here.
I know, where the brewery is now.
I know, it's so funny. But you had a show called In My Opinion.
Yeah, well, like everybody, I've got an opinion or more since I'm a Gemini, at least two.
Okay. Equally important,
that's
right?
That's right. It was a fun show in the sense that I took a lot of daily news stuff, some political, some, you know, man on the street stuff, some environmental, and just put my commentary to it. And some things were kind of outrageous. And at those points, I would throw papers in the air and the audience loved it.
I remember that.
You know, it's just sometimes when government does stuff, it doesn't make any sense.
Sometimes.
Well, yeah, at any rate, but after I started doing that on a fairly regular basis, I would get stopped at the supermarkets and go, I saw your last show. You are crazy. I said, yeah, don't you like it?
And
they go, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And to this day, you know, the show hasn't been on for a long time. When are you going to come back on, you know, TV? And I said, well, you know, if we had a TV station, I might, but at this point, it'd be relegated probably to radio and, you know, we'll see.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But at any rate, it was a lot of fun.
It was fun. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. And it raised, I think, a level of conversation in the community, whether people agreed with me or not. That wasn't the point.
Right.
You know, it was to get the subject matter out and be discussed.
Absolutely.
You know, local, state, national, international, all that kind of stuff. So it was good. I liked it.
So, tell me about your life before you came to Brookings. There must have been one, right?
Oh, yes. It's a very interesting life. Typically, what I tell people is I moved to California when I was two.
Wow.
I was born in Bremerton at the Navy Hospital, so I was a Navy baby.
Bremerton.
Washington.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I spent all my life in California until I moved to Brookings.
Really?
Right.
Where in California?
Well.
Or is that a state secret?
No, it's just so weird. It was like, you know, all over Southern California, then in Central California, Fresno, Modesto, Merced.
Wow.
Spent 2 years of high school in Los Banos, Sacramento, Lodi, Stockton, Placerville, Grass Valley, Nevada City. I mean... I've
Seriously?
Been around a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that was somewhat of a disadvantage as a young person, as I never stayed anywhere long enough to establish any really deep-rooted friendships. And the most traumatic thing for me was moving from my high school in West Covina, California, to Los Banos, which is in the middle of freaking nowhere. Where the entire high school was smaller than my freshman class down in West Covina.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and their favorite things to do on the weekends were, you know, go park on the levee and, you know, play around with their girlfriends and watch the dead cows float by in the, you know, drainage ditches.
Good grief.
So it was a culture shock, to say the least.
Yes, yes.
At any rate, but I got to live in a lot of different areas. Mm-hmm. The mountains and the beaches and the desert, you know, Palm Springs area, in the middle of the San Joaquin Valley.
Yeah, that whole San Joaquin Valley is a whole different culture.
Yeah, very, very agrarian mindset, pretty conservative in nature, but lots of really dedicated, hardworking folks. And I learned that although I appreciate the products of their labor, I don't want to do that. Although I did do it for a couple of summers, I was a beekeeper's assistant for one summer. Yeah, and I drove tractor for a very large cattle, Wolfson Land and Cattle co-op, and I was out on an open tractor, no cab, no air conditioning, rolling beets. You have to roll beets to compact them, or else they kind of grow, you know, ungainly, so... Yeah, it was interesting in 110, 115 degree heat with a straw hat on, my little transistor radio.
Was the humidity, I mean, that's the thing that I remember about back east, because my grandfather was a farmer, and it would get hot in the summer, but worse was the humidity.
Yeah, fortunately, in that neck of the woods, it wasn't like being in Stockton where you've got the port there and the canals and things like that. Mm-hmm. It was really dry, you know, so I didn't have to suffer too much with that.
Right. But, 110 dry heat is a little bit better than wet heat.
Marginally.
Yes.
Well, I came from Palm Springs, and they always tell me that 120 degree dry heat is better than, I'm going, better than what?
Yeah. Being on fire.
I guess.
So when and how did you end up in Brookings?
Well, I was working at a florist in Palm Springs. And they had six outlets in the entire valley there. And I ended up being their driver to go to the flower market and pick up flowers and then to the various growers for the filler material and stuff like that. And then deliver them all around to the various stores. And at one store, I happened to meet this young lady. And she, at the time... was working three jobs, and I ended up working, in addition to the florist job in the evenings, I was a cook at a vegetarian restaurant. And she ended up being a waitress there. So it was kind of like, you know, we were bound to like run into each other.
Yep.
So essentially, I moved up here with my then girlfriend to become wife, to become ex-wife, but we're still friends.
That's great. That's great.
That's how we ended up here. I was tired of California by that time. That was in 93.
Okay.
So I'd pretty much run the state from top to bottom, you know, border to border, you know, east to west. And I was ready for a change. So the first thing we did when I got up here is we took a month off. I told my boss at the hardware store, yeah, you can have me in a month. But I want to explore this new state that I'm going to call home. So we drove up I-5 up through Portland and then over to Lincoln City and down the coast and explored all the various territories and got settled into our own place and stuff like that. So it was really the first time I've ever done that exploratory kind of thing to know, you know, a little bit about where I'm at.
Yeah, because generally when you move to an area, you immediately start recreating your life.
Yeah.
And you don't take time to do the sightseeing and, you know, find out what the area is like.
Right. And I was very conscious of the fact that moving to a small town, you can't come in with preconceived ideas about where you're going to live. And especially being from California, I knew I was going to get the stink eye.
Yep.
And, you know.
And certainly like 94, was that when it was?
93, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it was very interesting. But one of the great things about living in California is not only did I live in big cities, but I lived in a lot of small towns. Mm-hmm. So I was used to the small town kind of a pace of life and mentality and some of the reservations that the smaller towns have against new people until they kind of prove themselves. So I didn't.
After 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, well, yeah. I consider myself and am considered now kind of like a local after 27 years. So,
right. You
know, it's getting there.
Slowly but surely.
But interestingly enough, when I started working at the old Kerr hardware store, I could spot Californians a mile away. They just put off this weird energy, you know, and they'd come in and they'd be grumping about something. And there was about three, maybe four different couples that I would take off onto the side room away from everybody and say, "You're from California, aren't you?" And they go, "Yeah, how do you know?" I said, "Well, you know, you kind of put off this weird vibe." Mm-hmm. You know, I said, "We're not interested." I was already talking like this was my home.
Right.
"We're not interested in you recreating here what you're leaving in California."
Right.
You know, we don't have malls, we don't have symphonies, we don't have live theater per se, you know, and the sooner you get used to what we call no hurry and curry, the better off you'll be with all your contractors, subcontractors, you know, technicians, professionals, whatever. And they'd start, you know, raising a little fuss, and I'd say, "No, just think about it. You're in a brand new area, brand new mindset, you know, just get to know the people." And invariably, they'd come back to me a month or two later because I knew they were in the middle of projects, either remodeling or brand new building. And they would come back and thank me, you know. So it is a whole different way of looking at things when you come to a small town and a different state.
Yes.
So that was fun.
And I think it's just smart when you're in any kind of a new situation, when you are the newbie coming into a situation that's already set, that you close your mouth, open your ears, and open your eyes, and just watch for a while. Watch and listen.
Yeah, it's kind of like going to a party that you don't know a lot of people, so you just kind of hang out and watch what's going on and who's associating with who, and you know, get a lay of the land that way.
Get a lay of the land, exactly.
Yeah. But that was a good training ground for me to, I think, be willing to establish friendships and long-term relationships with people in this town.
Now, did you say the old Kerr Hardware?
Yeah.
So what? Where was that?
Well, the old Kerr Hardware was where the new Kerr Hardware is.
Yeah.
But it was at street level. And it had wooden floors, so it was part of, you know, the old town that was built back in the 30s and 40s.
Huh.
Yeah, so it was one almost, you could probably consider a historical landmark of sorts, but it was, you know, like right next door to the central building, and that is a historical landmark for this area.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting to tread on the floors in a business that was established the year I was born, 1952.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a little odd.
Wow. And great.
Yeah.
You know, there's something just great about that.
Yeah. And I had fun because I was the new employee from California. I had long hair. They'd never hired a long-haired person before.
Oh, boy.
I was very outgoing. They didn't know what to expect from me. And one of my favorite lines with some of the old-time customers, once I got kind of comfortable with my role in the business, was, "Yeah, so where else can you come and spend good money like this and get abused like we abuse you, you know, kind of thing."
I love it. I love it.
And they'd stop and they'd look at me and they'd smile and go, "Yeah, okay."
That's right. Well, you know you're accepted when people give you, you know, a load of crap, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, and people, you know, I left the business for my own carpet cleaning business back in the late 90s. And for the, you know, following 2-3 years, they'd say, "Gosh, we sure miss you. You know, the place isn't quite the same."
Yeah.
You know, like, well, you don't have crazy people like me running around all the time. So just the way it is.
So you started your carpet business back then?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I had worked at Kerr Hardware since 93. I had taken a short break to work with the AYA school that we used to have here in town. It was like an alternative school.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they needed an office person to, you know, help run day-to-day operations. And I was getting a little tired of the hardware biz. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, why not? I'm always up for something new and different. That's mm-hmm. the Gemini aspect of me. I'll get bored with something and jump into something else.
Yep.
So I did that for about a year, year and a half. And then one of the owners saw me in the post office one day and said, any possibility you could come back and work for us? I went, well, as a matter of fact, AYA is going through a lot of changes right now, and I'm not sure I really like the direction they're going. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, let's talk.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to work for another 3 or 4 years there. But mm-hmm. by that time, being on my feet all the time was getting to my joints and stuff.
Right.
And I bought really expensive work shoes that were supposed to take care of all those problems. No. And then came the day when a customer asked me how to fix something. And I explained to them exactly how to fix something because I've done it several times mm-hmm. very successfully.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at me and said, well, that won't work. And I felt like saying some very not nice things. And I knew my days for retail sales were numbered.
Yeah.
So about that time, interestingly enough, Rick Taplin, who I bought his carpet cleaning machine from, he had just gotten it like a couple months earlier and had mm-hmm. one or two customers. But he wanted to buy the old coffee house in town.
Hmm.
Yeah, Java Java.
Okay, where was that?
That's where Pacific Sushi is now.
Ah.
Yeah. Okay. So I said, well, okay, can we work out a deal? And, you know, we came to a price, and then I spent my evenings and days off, you know, building the clientele mm-hmm. and paying off the equipment, and finally I was able to give my notice at Kerr Hardware and go into business for myself.
Fun.
And yeah, yeah. And I don't think I could ever work for another person again.
Yeah.
To
right.
be honest. You
no,
know,
I know. When you're your own person, it's, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And being a musician, summertimes I want to go to concerts and don't want to have to beg for time off and that kind of thing.
You still do the carpet cleaning,
oh, yeah.
You? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't
I've
do
had you to my house several times.
I know. I don't advertise traditionally. I've got, you know, magnetic signs on my doors, and most of it is word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a small town, that's really what sells the product the most.
Yep.
So.
Yep. And you do an excellent job.
Well, thank you.
I'm not actually going to give you a hoot here, but I am sort of. So there we go. Yeah.
Well, you know, I try to give a service that is affordable and that I feel proud of and that I could go and clean my mom's carpet and she wouldn't, like, you know, chew me out for
there
missing a spot,
yes,
or something
exactly.
like that, you know.
Jimmy, come back here.
exactly. So
you mentioned that you're a musician.
Well, yeah. When I first moved up here, there wasn't a lot going on musically. And I moved from Southern California, where I was in like a cover band or two or three or maybe even four, you know, working and playing music all at the same time.
And what do you play?
I was classically trained on piano from 7 to 14, yeah.
Wow.
And then I gave that up because I just didn't want to take lessons from my stepdad.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you're a very strict Germanic individual. I don't like this anymore. This is not fun.
It's not fun. Yes, exactly.
But when I moved out of the house at 18, I took it back up in Southern California where I ended up. So, but I came up here with, you know, my equipment and, you know, willing to take a look at getting back into music. And it was a slow go. So for the first 4 years, I did community theater.
Ah.
Which was really interesting. And actually working at the hardware store and doing community theater gave me the opportunity to meet a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really fun. So
but what theater group were you working with?
I was with, I believe it was Checo Pelican Players when they were in the old site in the shopping center.
I think that was before my time.
Yeah, that was the converted bank building that was there. So Yeah. And then as time went on, I got to know some musicians around and eventually formed a band with a bunch of bandmates called Deja Voodoo.
Okay, I remember that.
That was that was the hard rock heavy metal band, you know, and we were together for like 15 years, you know, and then things just kind of went their own way. And
they always do.
That's right, change. But now I'm in three bands.
Good grief, Jim Newman.
Spence Brothers Blues Band for 9 years, and then just got together with Stephanie Latour and some of the guys from The Sharks, and now we're called Stephanie Latour and the Reverbs.
I love that.
In fact, we're playing in Klamath tonight.
Oh, good.
Oh, boy. And then a new band we're putting together down in Crescent City. It's kind of like a Grateful Dead tribute band slash Americana slash cosmic 70s, 80s stuff. Well, yeah, we're a little bit all over the place, but it is a fun group, and it's very danceable. So
excellent.
Yeah, and I play keyboards, synthesizers, which means I can literally play any instrument in the world.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you know, from piano, organ, all the way up to a didgeridoo.
Isn't that funny? It's funny what electronics does.
I know. So at any rate, that's the artistic outlet for me. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what keeps me balanced and sane.
Now, you also do a tremendous amount of volunteering around town. I mean, I am amazed. I don't know where you get your energy. I just don't know.
I get that from a lot of people, and I just go, but isn't that what everybody does?
I guess not. I think not. So what are some of the groups that you volunteer with?
Well, let's go with some of the groups that I used to volunteer with. And I was on the Brookings Fire Department for 7-8 years.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's kind of where I got a chance to get some of my adrenaline going when we did Burn to Learns. And
It must have been interesting.
Oh, it was interesting. You know, you get to learn how to do wildland firefighting and how to jump into what they call the Jiffy Pop tents, you know, the little aluminum bags that you pull over yourself if you're caught in a wildfire so you don't burn up. Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of different things as far as that goes. So that was really very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good bunch of guys. And I was really surprised to learn that the majority of Oregon fire departments are volunteer in nature.
Isn't that odd?
Yeah. It is. I think it's kind of unique.
I would think so as well.
Yeah, but the training is very good, and the thing I really enjoyed about the leadership was they didn't want you to do anything that you weren't comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was okay if you weren't comfortable going into a burning building, because there was always other things to be done.
Great.
You know, so I liked burning buildings. They were fun.
Yeah, see, I don't think I'd want to go into a burning building. All of my instincts say, go the other way.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So there was that. There was the community theater, which is a voluntary position. Mm-hmm. Nobody gets paid to do that.
Right.
And then I don't know. I didn't really start doing a lot of heavy-duty volunteering until, probably the last 5 or 6 years. And
you know, it feels longer than that to me.
Well, it
now,
might
I could
be
wrong, but
I have no concept of time anymore.
Yeah. It just feels like for, I don't know, like the last 10 years, every time I turned around, you were doing something else with some other group in town.
Could very well be. I know I was the secretary for the Vietnam veterans for 7 years.
Oh,
you
okay.
know, so, and that yes. ended like 3-4 years. I guess it's 4 years ago. So that takes us back a ways.
Right.
And
now, what about stage lights?
Well, stage lights is kind of like an offshoot of my musical interest. It's a 501c3 that is dedicated to promoting musical education and performance in the schools.
Now that group has been around for quite a while,
right?
As I recall,
yeah, Perry Devine and Scott Graves, right?
Yep. Yeah, there we go.
It's coming back.
I know.
Those two brain cells are colliding every now and then.
Me too.
They originally started it along with a couple individuals that I didn't really know a number of years ago. And I've been on their board for 4 years now, something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, so
how time flies.
Yeah, it's crazy. So it was an offshoot extension of my musical, interest, and I was there in time to do the 2017 Wild Rivers Music Festival, which got burnt out literally, but by the Checo Bar fire,
which blew up the day before.
It blew up
Friday afternoon, and Saturday was the.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Unbelievable. But now I heard that people did, in fact, I've talked to some people who actually did go to it.
Yeah, all 100 of them.
Right, even though the smoke hung heavy in the air.
And, you know.
But they loved it. They said it was wonderful.
Kudos to the performers who, despite the smoke, sang and inhaled that stuff.
Amazing, amazing.
Yeah, so, you know, that...
But that kind of set the organization back a bit because
about $3,000,
which is... all of those expenses and,
That was kind of a tough hole that we're still digging our way out of. We just recently got a nice grant for $15,000.
Oh.
And a new storefront.
Really?
Which is going to be at the end of the little center where the tea room is.
Oh, you're kidding. That's wonderful.
Right. And we're going to be selling musical accessories for students who are, you know, in the band programs.
Great.
Hopefully we can find a technician that might be semi-retired that would be willing to come in on a regular basis and do instrument repairs.
Oh.
And then we'll have space for lessons.
Oh, that's great.
And for workshops. And a consignment area, too, for people who have musical equipment they want to sell.
Oh, that is excellent.
So we're really, you know, that's something that Kim has had in mind, Kim Devine has had in mind for a number of years, kind of her dream. And with this grant, we're now able to fund that successfully and not have to worry about, coming up with a monthly rent,
Absolutely.
Until things take off.
I'll tell you, grants are just, they're manna from heaven.
Oh, they really are.
Yep.
They really are, and I love, private sector financing versus getting the government involved. There's fewer strings attached and a lot more, I think, vision on the part of private sector people, because usually they're the granting foundations were started because of entrepreneurs.
Yes.
Stuff like that. So.
Right. Do you know the name of the foundation that you got the grant from?
I do, but...
You're not allowed to tell?
Right. We've been sworn to secrecy.
Sworn to secrecy. I love that. Until it becomes public information.
Well, I don't know if it ever will. It's a family-oriented grant that really likes to fly under the radar.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, good for them.
Thank you for that. We send them a thank you card with all of our board members'
absolutely.
Signatures.
Absolutely.
But
that's
other
wonderful.
Than that, we'll respect their request.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So are you reaching out to the students to let them know what's happening and the space that's going in?
Yeah, we have Nick Courtnage, who is the middle school music teacher, is on our board, and we've worked with Corey at the high school, and we're trying to encourage more involvement with the students in our organization, even if it's only in volunteer positions when we're putting on events and things like that. But coming up the middle of the month, we've got the Women in Music Showcase, which is November 16th, which is a Saturday.
Wow.
And it's my dream child.
Wow.
I'm letting my feminist side out.
I love it. Didn't know you had one, but thank you.
Everybody
Great.
Has duality. You know that.
Thank you. Especially if you're a Gemini.
Exactly.
So what is it?
So what I noticed over the years is we get a chance to see the guys play out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The bands and things like that. And occasionally they'll have a female lead vocalist. But, in comparison, 90-95% of the performances are done by men. I said, there's a lot of talented women in this town, in the area around us from Crescent City all the way up to Gold Beach. I said, why don't we put together an event highlighting women in music?
Nice.
Hence, Women in Music Showcase. Mm-hmm. And I've got six different acts lined up for this event. And the ultimate goal is to have some of the younger gals from the middle school and the high school attend, maybe the first time mm-hmm. around, and just listen.
Yep.
You know, and maybe, you know, screw up the courage to talk to some of the ladies who are performing and maybe develop a mentorship relationship.
Nice.
You know, so that they can work on their stage presence and delivery, you know, that kind of stuff.
That's wonderful.
In addition to the music aspect of it, we're going to have various nonprofit organizations that are not entirely women-focused, but mm-hmm. pretty much that way, like the Soroptimist organization, because they deal a lot in trafficking.
Right.
And primarily trafficking is around, you know, females.
Yes.
Especially the young girls.
Yep.
And hopefully maybe somebody from like the Oasis House.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Any organization, I've got Olivia Davis is working on getting people lined up for me as far as that goes.
Excellent.
So we're going to have information tables there. We're going to have music there. And the Grange is also putting on a fundraising spaghetti, all-you-can-eat spaghetti dinner.
Sweet.
For $10.
Sweet.
Yeah, so you know, Stage Lights is going to benefit. It's actually a free event. We do ask that you consider a donation.
Sure. Of course.
No, you know, course. And here's the interesting thing. There's so much free music going on around here. It's hard to get people to pay for music unless you've been established like Pistol River.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right, right.
And even they have some hard times every now and then. So we're doing a donation only. Mm-hmm. And when you put a donation, it's kind of interesting how people will drop like $20 in the jar, 10 or 5 or, you know, whatever. So we're hoping that that's the case here.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm going to take just a quick break and let everybody.
If you must.
I know. But I got to let people know what they're listening to. This is KCIWLP 100.7 FM, and this is Our Community. And my guest today is Jim Newman, who is an amazing community volunteer and just seems to have his finger in just so many pots. It's so exciting. So this is happening on November 16th.
Right.
At the Grange.
At the Grange from 4 till 7. So it's an early evening thing for...
Which is great for those of us who are a little bit older and don't like getting in the dark. I'm just saying.
Well, considering they roll the sidewalks up at 9 o'clock around here.
That's absolutely true, because none of us like driving at 9 o'clock.
That's right. Anyway, this is the first of hopefully many. I'd like to do this like on a quarterly basis.
Perfect.
You know, four times a year.
Yeah, perfect.
Because there's that much talent around to expose and share, you know, and encourage
so
the young
do
people.
Do make sure that somebody from your organization does a PSA that we can run on this station, right? Because
okay.
That will get the word out.
Right. Yeah, and I'll definitely be on Bruce's show.
Good.
You know, that kind of
perfect.
Stuff.
Perfect.
So, perfect. Yeah.
All right, so that kind of takes us into the Grange. You are also on the board of the Grange, aren't you?
I am the president of the Grange.
Good grief, man. So how did that happen?
Well, I always believe in partnerships.
Yes.
And I got to thinking, we have a wonderful little place to put on music. As a musician,
mm-hmm.
hmm. So I said, well, why don't I join the Grange? And mm-hmm. because if you're a Grange member, you get highly reduced rates on renting the hall for various
mm-hmm.
things. I said, yeah, we can mm-hmm. produce some stuff. So, you know, the VVA, Vietnam Veterans, produced a couple of shows there. And, you know, Stage Lights is producing, you know, this upcoming show and has done another couple in the past. So there's that partnership.
Excellent.
Okay.
And it's very synergistic. You know?
It is.
I mean, just everything works. And especially in a small town, that is the way things work.
Right.
They
yeah,
work
so,
together.
You know, when we put on a production of music, then the Grange can, you know, make a little bucks, mm-hmm. you know, selling food and, mm-hmm. you know, or desserts during break time and that kind of stuff. So I see it, you know, everybody mutually benefits.
Right, which is just perfect.
Right.
But you're also on the board of the food bank, aren't you?
I'm chairman of the board.
So... It's the Jim Newman Empire. The Godfather.
I have so many hats in my van, I don't know which one to wear sometimes.
I love it. So how did that happen?
Well, they were in need of another board member, mm-hmm. and my name came up in discussion because several of the people that were on the board already knew about me, mm-hmm. and they thought I would be a good fit, so I was voted on the board and basically started out again as secretary. Seems to be something that I'm adept at.
You seem to like that task. Yeah, well, love that.
Yeah, it's a challenge, but that's okay. You know, it's good. It's necessary.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And somebody has to take the notes.
Right. And subsequently, through board position changes, I ended up being the director of the board now. And that's been relatively new. That's only mm-hmm. been for about 2-3 months. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but working with Pam Weinberger over there, a very good working relationship with her and also with the volunteers out in the warehouse. You know,
and how's the food bank doing?
Food bank is doing good. Mm-hmm. We're going through an interesting time where donations cash-wise are down a bit. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to figure out why that is. Haven't put our finger on it yet, but at the same time, we just found out that we've got two $20,000 grants from Kroger Foundation, which represents the Roundup program at our local store here.
Wow.
Those are in the works, so we should be getting those very shortly, which will help because the checking account's getting kind of eeky squeaky, but mm-hmm. it's the ebb and flow of typical organizations.
Yes, you know? And it seems like when you're in crisis mode, especially things like the food bank, when you're in crisis mode, the donations come in.
Right. During the Checo Bar fire, that was extremely evident when people realized how much we were doing for not just the community, but for the firefighters and, you know, as well.
Yeah.
The donations really came in, you know, which was nice. It's just that we see an uptick every year in the needs for, you know, helping people not living in food scarcity, you know, kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's important to us to, you know, have a public presence. We're doing the Thanksgiving food baskets this year. And of course, the Elks Lodge always does the Christmas, you know, food baskets.
Great.
So we've got sign-ups starting this coming Monday, the 4th, for anybody interested at the food bank.
So they would sign up at the food bank?
Yeah, they can come down to the food bank for the basic information, and then they will send them to the responding community church.
Okay.
That's actually going to be putting the food bank on.
Okay.
And for the life of me, I don't want to misspoke myself. But
misspoke it.
Yeah. I don't want to do that. But it's a local church here. They've been around for a long time.
Tell me where the food bank is.
The food bank is on Hemlock Street. Mm-hmm. And I don't have the exact address because, I used to live across the street from it at one time. But it's next to the air conditioning folks and the daycare school.
Well, Hemlock is not that long a street.
No, it's not.
Yeah,
it's not. And we've got we just got a brand new storage container delivered there. So it's pretty obvious.
Nice.
It's, you know, light tan in color.
Right.
And we're there from 10 till 1 every day.
Excellent.
Yeah, so it's very easy to sign up.
When you say that there's been an uptick, like how much of an uptick? Is it significant? Have we seen a significant rise in food insecurity over the last several years?
Well, of course, you realize we're seasonally affected with the homeless migratory population.
Absolutely.
So during the summer months, that's going to hit us a lot harder.
Right.
But if we took that kind of out of the equation, I would say we're seeing on the average 50 new families a month.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, for whatever reason. You know, it could be loss of a job, an illness that it's affected the finances of the household, and they may only need it for a couple of months out of the year. In fact, I had one man, you know, give some money back today over at Fred Meyer's. He says, every now and then I need, you know, to reach out to you guys for a couple of months until I get my feet back on the ground, and then, you know, I'm okay.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's just like Pam's got all the statistics, and maybe I should have brought the new newsletter, but we do have a newsletter there. The first edition came out a few weeks back.
Great.
And we send that out to all of our regular donors.
Great.
And are trying to get that information disseminated to the general public, too. So.
And how does one make a donation?
They can go to our website, and there's information on there how to donate.
Great.
They can stop by the food bank and give a cash donation. We also have an interesting program called Full Plate Partners, which is really designed more for businesses, although individuals can sign up. And it's a packet of 12 pre-addressed envelopes. And every month you drop a check in the envelope, put a stamp on it, and send it to the food bank.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so, you know, it starts entry level as $10 and can go up to as much as you want. And that way it kind of ensures a typical countable income on a monthly basis.
Absolutely, which is very important.
Yeah, I think we're over 50 full plate partners right now.
Wow, that's
wonderful. So, which is really nice.
Yeah, that's excellent.
And Pam's been very creative, inventive as far as programs that do that. And of course, we've got the schools are collecting food, the churches. We just had one church drop off 350 pounds of food earlier today. The Postal Service does that. The Boy Scouts do that. I mean, just a lot of great community support.
Well, and as you're getting into this time of year when it's colder and, you know, not as nice out and everything else, it's important that people have food in order to stay warm.
Well, yes, yes. You know, and in our motto is nobody should go without. Period.
Yeah.
No questions asked.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's really good.
Good.
Yeah.
Excellent. So that's three. I think there's one more, the Lions.
Yeah, I'm president of the Lions.
Unbelievable. We have got to get you a crown.
Well, here's the interesting thing is all the organizations have a different methodology for conducting meeting business and all that. And I have to switch my way of thinking. I'll find myself saying, now, do we have to like have a motion on this? Because in this group we do, but I can't remember in this group if we do. And they just laugh. They go, Jim, you're just doing like a lot of stuff out there.
So maybe I'm thinking inside the hat that you wear, perhaps you
Sheet notes.
Exactly.
That may help. So at any rate, I joined the Lions. I was invited by a fellow Lion to join. And I said, well, why would I want to join? And they said, well, this is what we do in the community. They're very responsible for the eyeglass program for children in the schools, as well as hearing aids. And then past that, we also have a an income-qualified eyeglass program for adults as well as hearing aids.
Wow.
So that's what the Cans for Kids program is all about.
Okay.
And you will see some of the receptacles around town as soon as they get done doing the construction over at the old Ray's parking lot. That one should be opened up again. But
excellent.
Yeah, we typically will recycle between $450 and $550 worth of cans every Friday.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Right. But when you consider, like, the last time, what was it, October, we had 11 applicants for eyeglasses, of which three were children. They're automatically, we don't care what income their family has, they automatically qualify for all the services, the exams and the eyeglasses and stuff like that. Plus, there were eight other adults that qualified.
Wow.
So at a general cost of about $250 per person.
That's a lot of money.
And then we also just got done doing the eye exams in the schools for the kids.
Oh, wow.
830 students.
Wow.
At a cost of $6 per student.
Wow.
So we're hoping that the State Lions Club will pick up some of that expense. But yeah, that's why we do this.
That's impressive.
Yeah, we do it every week, 52 weeks a year, rain or shine. It's fun when you're out there in a storm, I'll tell you.
I think not. I remember as a child, my eyesight was not great. You know, it started to deteriorate pretty quickly. And, you know, if you can't see the chalkboard as a student.
Or read.
Right. You're in big trouble.
Yeah. So, and I think that was just, I got involved once I heard about that because of my commitment to kids in general.
Mm-hmm.
Had nothing to do with music or, you know, relationships. But so kids and people, you know, I got a soft spot for humanity, I guess.
So that brings us into the veterans, because you've done a lot of work with veterans over past several years, as far as I know. You are constantly motoring them to their doctor's appointments and stuff like that. So, you know, tell us about it.
Yeah, that got started when there was a need for somebody to drive the veterans or the VA transportation van when their office was up on Fifth Street. And I said, well, it sounds like a decent service. I could do that. And at the time, the DAV was running that office at Roseburg and was very well run.
Mm-hmm.
The downside was is that I had to go to Roseburg for a physical every year. Didn't get reimbursed for my time or gas.
Mm. And Roseburg is how far away?
Well, it's about 4 hours.
Yikes. Yeah, okay.
So at any rate, I decided that, I would try this out. Mm-hmm. And then DAV, I don't think gave it up. I think it was taken away from them by the VA Transportation Department. But at any rate, VA Transportation took it over, and I was getting, with the DAV, I was getting like 2 weeks notice so I could schedule things, because I'm a busy guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No.
The VA wasn't so much concerned. I would get like 2 days notice for veterans, and I go, guys, I told you this several times.
Yeah.
I need to know as soon as they know.
A little bit longer.
And veterans know 2 weeks at least ahead of time, sometimes months ahead of time, and it's all computerized.
Mm.
So there was no excuse not to get me the information. Yeah, it just became more of a frustration, and I just said, hey, I'm just going to treat these guys as they're my friends. Mm-hmm. We're just driving in the car, you know. And I'm down to about four veterans that will call me from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting in getting to know the veterans while I'm driving with them. I was actually able to help quite a few of them with medical situations and also with their benefit. A lot of them will file for a disability benefit through the VA and get the runaround because the VA doesn't want to pay out money. It's all about money. It's not about taking care of the veteran per se.
Amazingly and sadly, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at any rate, I was able to refer them to various sources through my association with the Vietnam veterans and listening to the guys, asking lots of questions about, well, what did you do in this situation? Because I got somebody that is very similar, you know. And, you know, to my credit, I guess, if I'm going to toot my own horn, a couple of those guys got some really nice settlements by being persistent.
Good.
And I explained it to them because veterans kind of have a short fuse at times, especially when they think they're getting jerked around by government entities. I said, look at it this way. When you finally get your back pay, you divide your back pay by the active hours that you put into your claim, and that's how much per hour you're getting paid.
That's nice.
Yeah, in some cases, it was like thousands of dollars an hour. Yeah.
And that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You really have to, because, you know, it's an investment of time into something that you feel that you deserve, and of course you really do.
Right.
So, you know, I was able to logic things through for a lot of the veterans. And besides that, I got to know them as people, and, you know, they're pretty cool, you know, a little screwy from time to time, but basically good folks.
Well, we are all a little screwy.
I think that's why I got along with them so well.
and I guess that's my question is, what is it that motivates you to working with veterans?
You know, it was weird. For the longest time, I just said, well, it's only because my then brother-in-law was, you know, president, and that's why I got involved. But then I started thinking about it more. It's like, look, my dad was Navy.
Mm-hmm.
My first stepdad was Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
My second stepdad was Air Force.
Hmm.
So it's like subconsciously I had this military connection in mm-hmm. my family already.
Mm-hmm.
Plus when I ended up rooming with the two veterans from Vietnam, one from the Army and one from the Navy, and we went through the PTSD nightmares and all that kind of craziness. I really saw that there was a need for community support for these men and women that have been through a lot. And some of them are still going through a lot. So I think
they are sort of invisible.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not a veteran, you don't just automatically look at somebody and go, oh, they're a veteran, unless they're dressed that
right,
way.
Well, they get their ball cap on or their shirt,
right,
jacket, whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of them out there that, as a prime example, I think per capita, we're one of the highest populations of veterans in the entire state of Oregon.
And why is that? Do you think it's the weather? I mean, why, what is it about Brookings?
Well, we're going to find out about that on this new series that I'm going to be doing, but I'll get back to that.
Which is very exciting.
I know. Candace is all a Twitter.
Oh, I am a Twitter guest.
I think the attraction for this area in veterans is it's away from the big cities,
mm-hmm.
the stress, the noise,
mm-hmm.
all of that stuff.
Which is a little PTSD kind of stuff, right? That, like, too much stimulus. Too
right.
much... Yeah.
Right.
Much
you know, in some cases, the veterans came up here many years ago as kids camping, you know, when their family went on camping trips.
Mm-hmm.
They maybe have experienced some of the fishing, and they remembered that.
Yes.
They remembered, oh, now I'm done with my work life.
Right.
And I'm retiring. Where do I want to go?
Right.
You know, and that's one of the positive factors of, you know, this area of Oregon is it is very placid for the most part.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things to do outdoors, which most veterans really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so certainly isn't for a lot of the job opportunities or the medical care necessarily.
No, I would not think so.
Anyway.
But is that an issue that have you seen that's an issue that the fact that there is not good medical care here?
It's becoming less of an issue because the VA has really reached out for community providers.
Ah,
and
okay.
They have a rule that if you live further than 40 miles from your local VA care facility. Now, our clinic is not designated as a care facility.
Which is actually good news.
Yes.
Okay. Now, right.
They do a damn good job as mm-hmm. far as taking care of the basic needs of the veteran and getting them to the care they need. But so now we're developing relationships and contracts with community providers here in Curry County, Del Norte County, over in Medford, Grants Pass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those are doable drives. They're not fun drives, you know,
right.
2.5 hours.
$1.99, but
yeah. Yeah,
right.
But it's much better than driving up to Roseburg. And Roseburg has curtailed a lot of its specialty clinics there.
Oh.
So they're, you know, mm-hmm. Farming them out to community providers.
Right.
You know, Sutter Coast is doing good. I know we've got some community providers up at Gold Beach Hospital.
Right.
You know, so it's getting better.
Yes.
But when I first started, you know, becoming aware of this, it was not a pretty sight.
No.
Yeah.
No. And I don't think there's much mental health care available, is there?
I don't know if there's a lot of mental health care available
for
anywhere.
Anyone,
right.
Yes.
Although I will say that White City does have a psychiatric wing over there, and some of the veterans end up finding their
wow.
way to White City.
Amazing.
But that's about it as far as I know.
Yeah.
There may be some private practice therapists
mm-hmm.
that are on board. I just haven't heard of anybody. I'm not directly in the loop either. So
let's talk about the show.
Okay.
Because we're going to run out of time here, and I just really want to talk about the show.
Okay. So, you know, trying to think of an interesting, you know, catchy name. And there's really nothing other than, you know, our veteran community.
Yes. I like that.
You know, and it really is a community. Yes. We have several organizations here. We've got the Marine Corps League. We've got the disabled DVA, Disabled Veterans of America, the Vietnam Veterans of America. Let's see, who else? Yeah, Rick's going to probably kick my butt next time he sees me.
Rick's group. Yeah.
Rick Bremer.
That's
anyway,
all right.
they're up across by the high school there. I just can't remember the name of the building.
VFW.
Very good. Thank you.
Anytime.
So we do have quite a few organizations in town, and they're very supportive, you know, of one another. They don't squabble too much every now and then.
So you're going to interview our veterans and
right. This is going to be kind of like, you know, personal interest stories, the man on the street kind of thing, and getting to know the people, mm-hmm. you know, who they are, where they came from, a lot like we're talking today. It's like, what have you done in the past? How in the hell did you end up in Brookings?
Exactly, and why?
Yeah, really. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
What works for you and what doesn't?
Exactly.
Right? I mean,
exactly.
You know, yeah.
And my hope is that, you know, we can use the information gathered here to enact change if necessary.
Absolutely.
You know, share it with our local state representatives.
Absolutely.
You know, and
I think just by making the rest of the community aware of what that life is and what some of the challenges are. And, you know, we can all make life better for each other.
Right, exactly. And there's a lot of insight to be gained from our veterans. They've seen things that we will never see in our lifetime.
And we don't ever want to see.
No.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
But, you know, it helps put a different perspective on maybe why the world is the way it is and all that kind of stuff. So
I'm assuming that you are looking for veterans to interview?
Absolutely. I've already got a handful that are really interested, but I plan on doing a long series on this as long as the radio station says, hey, go for it.
Yeah, we're thrilled.
And they can get in touch with me by either phoning or texting me at 541-254-1002.
Could you repeat that, please?
541-254-1002.
And we have, thanks to Meyer Memorial Trust grant, we have purchased some remote equipment, so you can actually go to them.
Right.
If they can't come into the studio or
a lot of times these conversations are not to be held out in the general public.
Yes,
you know.
Exactly.
So meeting at their house would work just
fine.
In unfair weather, you know, meeting out in the park.
Right.
I happen to like ambient bird sounds. I'm not so sure our technical wizard over here agrees with me, but that's okay. We'll work it out.
Thank goodness we've got technical wizards. That's all I can say.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, I'm really excited about this, Jim. I just think this is going to be an excellent series, and I'm just so glad that you've decided to take this on.
Yeah, and I'm going to have a lot of fun with it and hopefully have something for the radio station to be proud of. So I'm looking forward to it.
I'm quite sure. Thank you. And thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been, you know, a delight. It's always a delight to talk to you.
Oh,
it's always a delight. I know. But of course, once again, we're out of time.
Yeah, of course.
So thank you, Jim Newman.
You're welcome.
And thank you for listening. This has been Our Community with guest Jim Newman today. If you enjoy our programming, please consider becoming a part of our efforts. We're entirely volunteer run, and we always need more of you. Or consider becoming a member or a show sponsor. Visit our website, kciw.org, and see how you can help us continue to be your community radio station. I'm Candace Michelle. Thank you.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.